Hello and welcome to Yellow Star China News. I apologize for not having an episode for a while, if any of you actually care, but whatever. Today is Monday, January 7th, 2019. The first article for today comes from The Guardian, entitled U.S. and China Resume Trade Talks with Both Eager for Compromise. U.S. and Chinese officials held their first face-to-face negotiations since a 90-day truce was declared in a trade war between Washington and Beijing, in the hope of ending a bruising confrontation between the world's two largest economies. Hopes that the sixth round of negotiations between the two sides could yield a breakthrough helped Asian shares rise on Monday, combined with optimism about the state of the global economy on the back of strong U.S. jobs figures on Friday. In Tokyo, the Nikkei soared more than 3%, and there were also strong positive moves in Shanghai, Hong Kong, and Sydney. Talks among mid-level U.S. and Chinese trade representatives were scheduled for Monday and Tuesday. Chinese Vice Premier and Economic Czar Liao He unexpectedly attended the talks, according to Bloomberg, citing unnamed sources. After failing to reach an agreement in December when Donald Trump and Xi Jinping met, both sides agreed to suspend tariff increases while holding discussions on technology transfers, as well as intellectual property theft and cybersecurity. If no agreement is reached, U.S. tariffs on $200 billion, or 160 billion pounds, of Chinese goods will increase in March to 25% from the current 10%. Trump said on Sunday that China was under pressure to do a deal amid signs of a slowdown in its economy. I think China wants to get it resolved. Their economy is not doing well. I think that gives them a great incentive to negotiate, he said. Analysts believe the talks were unlikely to produce a major breakthrough, but will lay important groundwork for an agreement that both sides appear increasingly eager to reach. The situation now is that both sides are facing some economic problems. China is facing an export pressure and a likely economic downturn. The U.S. is facing a falling stock market. Thus, both sides are willing to talk and are expecting a deal, said Shu Yinhong, a professor of international relations at Renmin University in Beijing. I think it's possible to reach a deal before March if both sides talk and move fast, he said. China's leaders, in particular, are under pressure to end a trade war that is exacerbating an already slowing Chinese economy, in which exports, factory output, and consumer confidence have all declined. China's slowdown is occurring across the board, affecting almost every industry and region, said Scott Kennedy, a trade expert focused on China at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Resolving the trade war, or at least finding some common ground with Washington, will be needed to fully restore confidence, he said. The delegation, led by the U.S. Deputy Trade Representative Jeffrey Gerrish, does not include any top U.S. officials from the administration, a sign the talks will be a precursor to higher-level meetings. Chinese Vice Premier Liao He may travel to Washington in February, and Trump may meet the Chinese Vice President Wang Qishan at the World Economic Forum in Davos near the end of this month, according to reports. The U.S. delegation includes officials from the Treasury and Energy and Agricultural Departments, as well as the State Department and the White House, according to the Office of the United States Trade Representative. It promises to be the first time that the core of the agenda will center around the problems caused by Chinese industrial policy and the need to marketize China's economy, said Kennedy. If they can make sufficient progress on identifying the key issues and narrowing in on the possible solutions, that will pave the way for Chinese Vice Premier Liao He to visit Washington in the coming weeks, he added. Key U.S. exports, including soybeans, corn, and pork, as well as liquefied natural gas, are currently subject to retaliatory tariffs from China. China's industrial policy, Made in China 2025, which the U.S. argues violates World Trade Organization rules, is likely to be a topic of discussion. China is likely to raise the issue of the telecoms firm Huawei, whose global ambitions have been thwarted by a U.S. ban on its products. The arrest in Canada of a senior Huawei official, Meng Wanzhou, at the request of the U.S., has spiraled into a diplomatic incident, which includes two Canadians still detained in China. Gerrish, the head of the U.S. delegation, is likely to follow the lead of the U.S. trade representative, Robert Lighthizer, one of the most hawkish members of the Trump administration. Gerrish has previously described Lighthizer as one of his incredible mentors. Observers say that, beyond reaching an agreement, a major sticking point will be over how to confirm that both sides uphold it. Chinese officials have reportedly indicated a willingness to establish such a mechanism. The big issue is not just that an agreement is reached, but verifiability, that China is living up to their end of the bargain, said Christopher Balding, a former associate professor of business and economics at the HSBC Business School in Shenzhen, who writes about the Chinese economy. In recent weeks, Beijing has made some conciliatory gestures, including drafting new rules that would ban forced technology transfers. China has promised to buy more U.S. goods as well as cut tariffs and improve market access for foreign companies in China. Still, these concessions and economic pressures both sides face may not be enough to bring both sides to a deal. The U.S. is very wary of Chinese changes as simply being paper reforms that change little on the ground. That perception will be very difficult to overcome, said Roland Raja, the director of the International Economy Program at the Lowy Institute in Sydney. He said that any agreement is likely to be framed as part of ongoing negotiations, with the threat of tariffs kept in place. He said, the broader relationship has been deteriorating quite rapidly, meaning neither side want to cave in too much on the substantive issues as they see it as part of a broader and longer-term strategic battle. The second article for today comes from the Financial Times, entitled China Turns Up Heat on Individual Users of Foreign Websites. A Chinese man has been fined for accessing foreign websites in a rare punitive measure against an individual user, highlighting the government's tightening of internet freedoms. Zhu Yunfeng was fined RMB 1,000 or $145, roughly a fifth of the average monthly wage in his city of Shaoguan in Guangdong province, according to a state media report over the weekend. His case comes as Chinese citizens as well as foreign businesses are being threatened by a wave of crackdowns on virtual private networks, VPNs, which are used to bypass Beijing's internet controls in order to access banned websites such as Google and Twitter. Mr. Zhu had used the popular VPN app Lantern to access foreign websites and was punished under a public security law introduced in 1997 that forbids access to the foreign internet without permission, the police statement said. Over the past couple of years, the Chinese authorities have made legitimate headway in shutting down and limiting the use of VPNs from within China, said Charlie Smith of GreatFire.org, a censorship watchdog. But we have rarely seen VPN users get arrested, Mr. Smith added. In 2017, China passed new regulations stipulating that only government-approved providers could operate VPNs and has since pushed multinationals to buy costly state-owned VPN services, sometimes by cutting off their private connections. That year, Apple removed 674 VPNs from its China App Store. However, internet users were unsure how far the authorities would go in cutting off ways around its great firewall of internet controls. The government heavily censors the internet to restrict citizens' access to information, but is also aware that companies as well as universities need to use banned platforms to do business and research. In a statement in the Financial Times, the Ministry of Industry and Information Technology said it was still researching the implementation of its anti-VPN measures. Mr. Zhu's case is a worrying sign of further deterioration of internet freedoms, and Maya Wang, a researcher at Human Rights Watch in Hong Kong. In China's border region of Xinjiang, there's already a de facto ban on the use of VPNs, and those caught using the software can be subject to arbitrary detention in re-education camps. According to a photo of a police notice circulated on social media, the police bureau of Rongcheng District in the city of Chongqing last week summoned Huang Chengcheng on suspicion of illegally conducting connections to the international internet. The Rongcheng police could not be reached for comment. Domestic analysts said that arrests would probably be made to punish political activities online as opposed to the sole use of VPNs. Last November, Pan Shidian, a 48-year-old man from the southern city of Nan'an in Fujian province, was sentenced to 15 days in jail for using a VPN and writing inappropriate posts on Twitter, according to a copy of the police statement shared by Mr. Pan. Over the past years, Chinese authorities have taken an interest in Twitter despite it being banned in China and pressured activists to delete their posts. These are little pockets of freedom that people use to come up for air. The government is squeezing out their pockets, said Ms. Wang. Research by the anti-censorship organization Freedom House shows that at least 20 to 30 million people in China circumvented the Great Firewall in 2018, and that VPN use increased during political significant but censored events, such as the arrest of Huawei's chief financial officer in Canada or Taiwan's local elections. The third article for today comes from Al Jazeera, entitled Southeast Asia Wary on China Belt and Road Initiative Survey. Southeast Asian countries are cautious about China's rise and its flagship Belt and Road Initiative, BRI, according to a new policy survey. The survey, which was released on Monday by the Singapore-based ISEAS Yusof Ishak Institute, polled 1,008 respondents from all 10 member states of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, ASEAN, including people in government, academic and business communities, civil society and the media. China was seen by 73% of the respondents as having the greatest economic influence in the region and was also believed to have more clout politically and strategically than the United States. But the people surveyed by the think tank also expressed concern about Beijing's geostrategic ambitions. Fewer than 1 in 10 say China as a benign and benevolent power, with nearly half saying Beijing possessed an intent to turn Southeast Asia into its sphere of influence. This result is a wake-up call for China to burnish its negative image across Southeast Asia, despite Beijing's repeated assurance of its benign and peaceful rise, the report's authors wrote, according to Reuters news agency. Some 70% said their governments should be cautious in negotiating BRI projects to avoid getting into unsustainable financial debts with China. A view strongest held in Malaysia, the Philippines, and Thailand. Nearly half said Chinese President Xi Jinping's hallmark policy would bring ASEAN closer into China's orbit, while a third said that the project lacked transparency, and 16% predicted it would fail. Amid China's growing reach, Southeast Asia is increasingly skeptical of the U.S.'s commitment to the region as a strategic partner and source of security. 6 out of 10 respondents said U.S. influence globally had deteriorated from a year ago, and 2/3 believed the country's engagement with Southeast Asia had declined. About a third said they had little or no confidence in Washington as a strategic partner and provider of regional security. The conventional wisdom that China holds sway in the economic realm, while the United States wields its influence in the political and strategic domain, will need to be revisited in light of the survey results, the Institute concluded. Some Western governments have accused China of pulling countries into a debt trap with the Belt and Road massive infrastructure projects, an accusation China has denied. There was a call for ASEAN to play a more active role in Myanmar's Rohingya crisis, although a majority of the respondents sought mediation rather than diplomatic pressure. In 2017, some 730,000 Rohingya fled to Bangladesh to escape a violent crackdown by Myanmar's security forces crackdown in the wake of attacks on military posts by members of the Arakan Rohingya Solidarity Army. United Nations investigators have accused Myanmar's military of carrying out killings, gang rape, and arson with genocidal intent, an allegation the military has denied. The fourth article for today comes from the South China Morning Post, entitled "How China's Worsening Economic Woes Are Shattering the Dreams of Its Top Graduate Students." Tan Shiyang, a Beihang University Biological Science and Medical Engineering graduate student, should be one of the last people to have to worry about finding a decent job in China. Biotech scientists with his skills are always in short supply, and his Beijing-based school is regarded as one of the best, with a reputation as China's answer to the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. And so, when Tan received multiple job offers soon after meeting representatives from various companies at an autumn on-campus recruitment fair at Beihang, things seemed to be working out as expected. He eventually decided to accept an offer of employment as a researcher with a high-tech firm in Shenzhen, one of China's most vibrant cities. Assured of a job after graduation, Tan settled back and focused on enjoying his final months as a student. But in December, things took an unexpected turn. The company he agreed to work for, Shenzhen Mindre Biomedical Electronics, told him that due to a change in the company's recruitment plans, the job offer was invalidated. Mindre, China's largest medical equipment maker, said it would give Tan 5,000 yuan, or US $727, roughly a third of what he would have been his salary for 1 month as compensation. The change has thrown Tan's life into chaos, coming as the campus recruitment season winds down and China's economic health continues its recent downward trend. I chose Mindre because I wanted to work as a researcher for an innovative firm, and that's why I turned down all other job offers, Tan said. Now I have to start again. I'd rarely thought about the economic downturn before, but now I guess I am one of its victims. Tan is not the only graduate student caught off guard. Eric Lee has accepted a job offer had accepted a job offer from Mindray with a starting annual income of 200,000 yuan. When he too was told that the offer had been withdrawn, he said his dreams were shattered. "I had planned to make good use of the money to buy milk powder for my nephew every month," Lee said. "I had planned to save 120,000 yuan a year to prepare for my marriage to my girlfriend, and I dreamed of the day when I could afford a down payment on a small flat in Shenzhen," he said. "That's now all vanished." Lee said Mindray had held a welcoming party for new hires on December 22nd in Shenzhen, where company officials talked about the incoming employee's bright future. 1 week later, the students received a phone call from the company telling them their job offer had been terminated. A number of students who had similarly been hired by Mindray and then had their offers pulled created a chat group to figure out their next steps. Lee said the participants commonly felt it was their misfortune to have graduated in a year when China was under mounting economic pressure. In an email to the South China Morning Post, Mindray said it had signed tentative employment agreements with 485 new graduates from about 50 universities in China since September, but it decided to terminate 254 of those contracts at the end of December after an internal review. The company had hired 430 new graduates a year ago. Mindray, whose product lines include patient monitoring devices, said that the demands of maintaining a sound operation in 2019 were heavier than in the then past years, and it had to scale back its students' recruitment plans for the sake of continuous and steady business development. Under Chinese regulations, agreements between students and potential employers are classified as contractual agreements, not official labor contracts, according to veteran human resources manager Lisa He. Thus, potential employers can legally terminate the contracts after the students agree to the terms. It was rare, however, for an employer to terminate contracts with hundreds of students at once, He said. An official jobless claim report showed employment in China has been stable despite the months-long U.S.-China trade war and stock market volatility. Some 12.93 million jobs were created in the first 11 months of 2018, an increase of 130,000 over the same period last year. In November, China's surveyed jobless rate in urban areas fell to 4.8% after rising to 4.9% in October. However, an increase in the number of companies announcing hiring freezes and job cuts suggests that in sectors such as high tech and finance, the employment picture actually could be much bleaker than official statistics suggest. Before the US and China announced a 90-day truce in their trade battle on December 1st, then new economic data had added weight to the argument that a slowdown in China's economy was worsening as the trade war with the US dampened consumer confidence and hurt sales of goods such as cars and electronics. In light of these and other forecasts, China's leadership has made stabilizing growth its top priority for 2019, since it regards job creation, especially for ambitious young graduates like Tan and Li, as necessary to ensure social stability. This year, 8.34 million students will graduate from Chinese colleges and universities, an all-time high, according to the Ministry of Education. By contrast, a decade earlier in 2009, China had just 5.3 million new graduates. At the same time, China's economic growth has slowed to its lowest level in a decade, and the worst is expected to come. China's high-tech firms and shadow banking institutions, which hired aggressively in past years, have either imposed hiring freezes or cut jobs. Song Xuetao, an economist at Tianfeng Securities, wrote in a research note that about 2 million vacancies disappeared from F51job.com, a leading Chinese hiring website, from April to September. Song found that new job openings at private firms with 50 to 500 employees fell very sharply. This decline has made young job keepers insecure, pushing them to chase so-called stable positions at government agencies and state-owned enterprises as private firms like Mindray prove unreliable bets on a future. Mindray, founded in 1991, went public on the New York Stock Exchange in 2006. But it decided to delist its shares from the New York market in 2016 and apply for a listing in China's A-share market. It finally launched an initial public offering on the Shenzhen Stock Exchange last October, raising about 6 billion yuan. The company now has about 7,000 employees globally and posted a profit of 2.6 billion yuan in 2017 on sales of 11.2 million yuan. Mindray received 13% of its revenue from the North American market in 2017. Joan Liu, another graduate student released from a work deal by Mindray, said the experience changed the way she looked at the job market. Mindray is a leading firm in the industry, and its shares are publicly traded. However, it still has to terminate contracts with us, and you can imagine how other small firms are doing, she said. Now the first thing that comes to my mind when considering an unemployment opportunity is whether the job is safe, whether I would be laid off suddenly. I think only state-owned enterprises are trustworthy amid an economic downturn. The last article of today comes from Channel News Asia, entitled Air Quality Worsens in China's Henan Province, Improves Elsewhere. Air pollution in China's heavy industrial province of Henan worsened in December even as other regions improved. Official data showed, with its cities hit by unfavorable weather and a struggle to find cleaner sources of economic growth. China is restricting industrial output, traffic, and coal consumption in the smog-prone north for a second year in a bid to cut pollution during the winter heating period, when thousands of mainly coal-burning boilers are switched on. But the nine cities in Henan, home to around 95 million people, still recorded a rise in small lung-damaging emissions known as PM2.5 to an average of 82 micrograms per cubic meter in the last month of 2018, up 12% from a year earlier. Emissions in the cities, which include several big steel, aluminium, and coal-producing districts, had already soared by 107% from a year earlier in November, according to a Reuters analysis of official data. As many as 79 cities throughout the north and east have drawn up plans to control smog this winter, with many committed to cutting PM2.5 emissions by 3% from last year. For these cities, average PM2.5 levels fell 18% in December from a year earlier to 66 micrograms per cubic meter, according to Reuters calculations, although still nearly double China's national standard of 35 micrograms. But the lower local increases in Henan and elsewhere show how much cities are at mercy of the weather, with conditions such as high humidity and low wind exacerbating smog. My analysis indicates that the rises in Henan are accounted for by the weather, said Lori Mielewerter, energy analyst with Greenpeace. Henan's smog concentrations have worsened since the end of the last year, with the local government saying on Saturday that 12 provincial cities have issued red alerts for the coming week. Some 28 cities in the major pollution control zone around China's capital, Beijing, are also struggling to meet winter air quality targets, with average PM2.5 in the last 2 months of 2018 up 17% compared with a year earlier. The zone includes the country's top steel-producing province of Hebei, where average emissions rose 11% in the last 2 months of 2018. Hebei has promised to cut 2.5 by 5% this year compared to 2018, the official Hebei Daily reported on Monday, citing the local environmental bureau. It vowed to cut another 14 million tons of steel smelting capacity and 9 million tons of coal production after shutting 12.3 million tons and 13 million tons respectively in 2018. The province said last week it had cut PM2.5 by 12.5% to an average of 56 micrograms over the whole of 2018, beating its target. Thank you for listening today. I'll see you guys next time. Please be sure to like my Facebook page, Yellow Star China News. Goodbye.